Okay.
Okay, welcome everyone to the July 26th meeting of the Legislative Performance Audit and Oversight Committee. Looking for a motion to accept the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Hennessy, second by Wyler. Any additions, deletions, or corrections to the minutes?
Yes, sir. I actually wasn't present. I'm sitting next to you. It shows me to be present. I was not present at the meeting. It shows me not voting, which is good, but it has me present.
Okay. So that should be corrected.
Are you?
I'm just going to pass you your name tag, but I don't have a question.
Okay, we have seven members present. Let's have the status of the ongoing performance audits.
Want to vote on the
minutes? Seeing no changes, all those in favor?
There was a change.
And there was the one change on the name of attendance.
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? And one abstention.
Okay, I guess I'm up. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Steve Smith, Director of Audits for the LBA. We have two performance audits ongoing right now that you've approved, as well as fiscal committee. The Board of Dental Examiners, we're in the middle of field work on that. We are also starting to write observations and mutual agreement with the board itself. As we prepare those, we're feeding them to them so they can begin to act on them and respond in sections. As you can imagine, with a board, we're at the mercy of when they meet, when they convene, so that can be once a month, so that tends to create some inefficiencies. So we thought that this would be good to kind of help guide them and speed them along. So with that in mind, I think we're looking at a draft report to them by mid to late October, and hopefully by the time all responses and the board approves, we can go before fiscal for presentation before the end of the year. This appears to be another lengthy report where a lot of observations from the board, as well as OPLC as it relates to their activities in support of the board. So next one is the child care licensing unit. You'll be voting on the scope statement for that. We're in the process of planning. We have a little bit of a delay in really getting into our work. Department of Health and Human Services, we had to enter into a letter of an agreement, and this is the second or third time we've had to do this around the protection of data in accordance with the HIPAA security confidentiality standards that are out there. So to get both sides to agree on the language, that's just to make the committee aware that we're doing that. So
honor of God.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jay, is the negotiation with respect to the child care licensing, the confidentiality is not going to inhibit you from doing the things you need and asking the questions you need to ask. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
No, it's just making sure that they have a clear understanding of what data we want access to, how we're going to protect that data, as well as how we're going to destroy any data that we just don't need to support our conclusions at the end of the audit. So no, there's no restrictions to it. It's just I think on the HHS's side, they just want to make sure they know what we need and how we're going to handle it and how we're going to protect it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at an email that Senator Kahn sent out. Sorry about that. I'm looking at an email that Senator Kahn sent out, I think a day or two ago, And he made several suggestions, and I just want to be sure that they're thrown out for the committee to think about. He was asking for the inclusion, perhaps, of identifying the reasons why the number of child care facilities have decreased over the audit period, and to address the objectives, including reviewing barriers to hiring and retaining child care facility workforce, and reviewing capacity of existing licensing facilities to expand. That may already be in the scope of the statement, I'm not sure.
These are currently not in the scope, and I think we just got this email, I guess it was on Sunday, we really just didn't look at it until this morning. Vile, who is the manager, can speak to this, but I think just kind of broad spectrum, there's one that we think we might be able to provide some information on, but I think that the, especially the barriers to hiring, retaining child care facility workforce, there is a task force that I believe is looking at that issue, as well as that falls outside the unit itself, licensing unit. So if we were going to broaden the scope, it would mean that we would be going outside of the unit into the, can't think of the name off the top, but Bile, if could you just speak to that?
Sure.
Sure.
So out of the three areas that Senator Kahn had sent out, we think that we could probably do some work on that first question, and his, the way that he worded it here was identify reasons why the number of child care facilities have decreased over the audit period. Can you hear me?
No.
That's a bit better. And it will help with the recording.
Okay. All right. So like I said, I think the first area that Senator Kahn asked us to look at, the identified reasons why the number of child care facilities has decreased over the audit period, I think we could provide some information on that. It may not be auditable because we'll be looking at, we can certainly look at the programs that have closed during the four-year audit period. We've extended the audit period a little bit more than our usual 2 years just to be able to get a trend. And we could summarize the types of programs that have closed and look at those files to see if we can discern why they closed. So I think we could do some work around that. The other two areas, I think, are outside of the scope of the CCLU, the Child Care Licensing Unit. And some of the information that we would be able to provide here would be more anecdotal in summarizing other information that's already out there. So I don't know if that would be the best use of our resources at this point.
Thank you very much.
Senator,
I appreciate it.
Thank you. Would you be able to provide the capacity versus enrollment numbers for the child care centers?
I believe the Child Care Licensing Unit should be able to provide those numbers.
So that may hit on Senator Kahn's second, the capacity versus for the existing licensed facilities to expand. It'll give us a little bit of information. Do we even need expansion of the facilities, or do we just need more workers so we can use what capacity we have out there, or licensed capacity? Thank you.
And I will say that Melissa Clement is here as well, so she may be able to answer some of those questions too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we need to be careful of the risk of conflating legislative intent or legislative issues with the function of a performance audit. They're markedly different, and we run the risk of expanding beyond the statutory authority, as well as beyond what I think we may want this division to do. I'm concerned that we start conflating, again, legislative with performance. Thank you.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was questioning the geography of where these centers are located compared to the need that's being manifested. It just seems to me that that's one of the real problems we have in terms of addressing this situation. And I'm thinking in the North Country, are the centers closing, and yet there is a demonstrated need there, but there's no ability to address that need. So the geography would be very important to me. Where they are, how many they're serving, and the unserved need that manifests itself in other parts of the state. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
I guess I should say, I don't think that right now part of the scope? If you broaden the scope of our audit, we get into that.
Well, if you don't address that,
I think we could work with the CCLU to get some of that summary information, and definitely include that in our background as far as the number of facilities by region. Melissa, I'm assuming that the data are kept that way, where we can look at the number of facilities and the number of slots that are available within a geographic area. I think we could definitely do something around that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Weidel.
I move we accept the scope as suggested.
Second.
Motion by Weiler, second by D'Alessandro. Discussion.
Can we specifically, are we going to adopt all three of these? Or the specific language on what we're including here from Senator Kahn's letter?
Representative Weiler moved it being accepted as written,
right.
I believe.
As much as they can, they'll try to include it.
Right.
Just so we're not mandating an expansion.
No.
Okay.
If I may, just to kind of broaden, I think what we're trying to get at is that this type of information is anecdotal. Anecdotal is not necessarily auditable.
Right.
In which case, we can measure it against an objective standard or something. So it'd be more informational if we can get some data or something that someone could perhaps draw some conclusions on. We will try our best to do that, but certainly some of this falls outside the scope.
Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Scope statement is accepted. The committee requested further research on two programs, the weatherization program.
In your package, it should be a number 4 on top of this. It's really sort of a small program that it helps about 200, they plan on helping 250 clients at a cost of $1.6 million, which is federal funds coming from the Department of Energy. We can certainly look at the efficiency and effectiveness of the program. I guess it's whether you want to spend LBA time on a federal program without any general funds attached to it.
Comment from the committee on that.
Well, I think that's a good point. How are we going to investigate? It's a federal program. The weatherization program is run by most of the CAP agencies, is it not? So the CAP agencies have to report back to the feds, and they do that on an annual basis as to how that money is spent, how many units have been taken care of. So couldn't we just transition that to this and take those things that have already been done and bring them forward as part of a package? I don't see us doing any further work on it. I don't think that warrants any work on our part, unless there's state money that's involved in the weatherization, and I'm not sure there is at this point.
Yeah, I think there's just some oversight by the Office of Strategic Initiatives. So I'm not sure, but they make it a little bit of that federal funds to actually administer the program.
Sure.
But again, we haven't looked at it before, this program. It's really up to the committee.
So maybe we could wait until we have some disturbing information to investigate.
Okay.
Fixed wing aircraft program.
All right. You should have another document before on top of it, plus a recent article in the Engineer about the program. It seems like they have, we got the topic, they just called it a fixed wing program. I believe there was just one plane that's a fixed wing. They also have this unit called the Special Enforcement Unit, has a helicopter and some drones too. It seems like the plane is just used mostly for traffic enforcement. Numbers that we saw in 2019 said they flew 129 times that year, resulted in 4,802 reported events, and they looks like they caught 547 speeders that were going over 90 miles per hour. Interesting, in the article in the paper, it said it's a civilian pilot and along with a state police observer that fly that.
Discussion by the committee. Senator Gaida.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to question whether the cost of maintaining an airplane, hangaring the airplane, insuring it, and so forth, are incorporated in. Generally speaking, for that little flight time, it's better to lease an airplane than to buy one. I don't know what the arrangements are, but I think this deserves some inquiry.
So you would wish that to be included in the scope statement? You'd be looking for that in the scope statement?
The fixed and operating costs for the aircraft, and also the cost of contracting the pilots. If in fact they do, you said they do contract the pilots.
It said in the newspaper article that it was a private sector person, civilian pilot. Right. So I'm just going by what was in the paper. I will mention on our John Clinch will probably be the in charge of doing the audit. He had been taking flying lessons all the way up until COVID. He was up to his solo when I think COVID hit. So he does have some knowledge on small aircraft, and we'd probably use him as the in charge if you do this audit. So usually we don't have that kind of special knowledge.
Representative Weber.
Yeah, it's been some years since I looked into the cost of this. As I recall at the time, there were state troopers that were the pilots, and one of the airline pilots that flew with me was also, I guess we call it an auxiliary trooper. And so they gave him a chance to do some of the flying as well. But he didn't get along with the pilot that was working for the state, so he didn't do much of it. But anyway, it was at one point a state trooper. I guess it isn't anymore.
Representative Weber.
I guess I'm wondering if this isn't another of those things that doesn't really fall into the scope of an audit. I think that it sounds to me that what Senator Gaida is talking about is a simple comparison of cost efficiencies, which doesn't seem to me to be a program audit, which is what we're talking about. And it seems like awful small potatoes to use a pretty extensive and well-qualified staff to look at. That sounds to me like it's more an ad hoc study committee or something of that nature in terms of the budgetary considerations rather than an actual program audit.
Other comments about the desirability of the boiler?
I remember when Beverly Rodishin took this on as an axe to grind and wanted to get rid of it. At least she got rid of a helicopter.
Senator Gaida.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If in fact you proceed, I own an aircraft. I have operated facilities. I would ask you to look into the reserves that are required as part of the costs, rather than just an hourly operating cost. Included in that has to be the engine overhaul reserves, the paint reserves, avionics update reserves, a great deal of hidden costs that may or may not be reported. All due respect to Representative Weber's comments, which are salient, I think that's something that should be looked at. Make sure we get the total cost of the aircraft operation. Thank you.
Okay, let's see if their office comes back with any further reasons to request an audit. fiscal committee is waiting for approval of three other audits, retirement system investments.
I just want to make, so for this, for the state police fixed wing program, voting for it right
we're
now?
We're waiting, pending further investigatory reasons to spend all that money.
I might give it an outside idea, how much it brings in, how much it costs, and then see whether it's worth it.
So, do you think, do you want like maybe a new, I guess what someone called this a mini scope, you know, because you haven't voted on it. You want us to do a little bit more work to try to get at some of those numbers? Or?
Discuss it in your office and see what anybody thinks there of what might be lurking in the shadows. We'll decide at a later meeting.
All right, so you table this, we'll come back next time. All right. And on, you were going to number five, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah. These are just topics that you had already looked at last meeting, and you had tabled all three. There was a fourth topic that you voted on to stop. That was that environmental pollution control tax program. Right now, these are still, officially you voted to do the audits, and then you held them until you wanted more information, and I guess they're still tabled, so you can do whatever you want now. You can keep them on the table, you can discuss them. Really what we need is one topic at the end of this meeting to keep John Clinch busy this summer.
Okay, does anyone have?
I would suggest that the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services, a choice for independence, be an audit that we look at. Given what I've seen in the last operating budget, some of the elderly and adult services that were funded were never taken care of. And I'm thinking of there are two programs that I know of that we funded that weren't initiated. They were old programs that were supposed to be restored, and they weren't. But in the area of elderly and adult services and choices for independence, that's very significant in terms of our treatment of the adult population in the state. So I would like to see that go forward, Mr. Chairman.
Is that a motion?
I would move that, sir.
Motion by D'Alessandro.
Second.
Second by Gaida. To advance the Bureau of Elderly and Adult Services and Choices for Independence audit. Discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I have drafted language for a scope document to be considered. I have copies for everyone present. It's fairly extensive because the operations of those departments are pretty complicated and involved. And so I'm not sure whether it made it to your individual emails or not, but I have copies here and it will be in your email as well.
I'll be happy to present several.
Senator Guy, would you like us to take those topics or those issues and have those in consideration as we write a formal scope statement?
Yes. In fact, this might in fact become the formal scope statement. It was drafted with that intent. That's yours to make, your decision.
Right. I mean, we'll end up making, we had a four-page pre-scope statement here. And what we'll do is if the committee votes on this topic, we'll do our formal background, get information from the agency, and then bring back a real scope statement, which will try to address some of the topics that are in there. But we haven't had time to really look at what you have listed. I just know there's a lot of detail in there.
Correct.
I would move that we proceed as suggested, that a formal scope to the be made, because I haven't had a chance to look at this or read it or absorb it. So
is that an amendment to Senator D'Alessandro's motion?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that.
I'm
sorry.
No,
okay.
I'll withdraw anything. Go with Senator D'Alessandro's.
Okay. we have a motion to advance this, and we have this suggestion that the staff will consider the presentation by Senator Guida. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Retirement system investments. Representative Wilder.
I had asked the LBA to show me a 10-year list of the returns. What I found, and I've read a lot of the stuff that they put in, like the all the reports, including the latest one I read was in the single audit. They described the whole retirement system. They put on what they assumed as a rate of return. They listed all their investments. There wasn't one of them over 4%. So how could they possibly keep assuming 6.75? And this is the problem we're having, why it's going further and further apart. So I would be happy just to get that 10-year list, because they don't publish it. What is your real return? I mean, is it that difficult? We can't find out. So there is a real return every year. They have to do that. And it's far short of what they are assuming. In the meantime, we're building up this huge debt that at some point is going to dominate the whole budget. But it's just kind of in the background. Nobody's talking about it, but it's enough to bankrupt the state. So if we could get some more truth in reporting, I would be happy if we could even see that.
Senator Guida.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. When the decennial committee first met, I think that the deficit in the retirement fund was like $5 billion, and it's now $6 billion. 10 years later,
keeps growing.
We're going in the wrong direction, and a large part of that is because, again, the assumptions on rates of return, which have slammed every community in the state with the latest change, talking millions of dollars of added cost to every town in the state for their retirement costs, to try to make that existing plan to finish that and to pay off that debt by 2039 work. And clearly, it ain't working. So I would strongly encourage anything we can do to find out what's going on and the rationale behind a rate of return 4% at a time when the rest of the stock market's going up in some cases 20% a year. Understanding risk and conservatism and so forth, but that's just unacceptable and it's not working, so we have to do something. I would strongly support moving forward with this.
I'll mention there are members, people from the retirement here, if you want to have any questions for them or if they want to address this issue.
Do the retirement system folks have anything to add to this discussion?
Yeah, we have some highlights from June 30th we can share with you, and then also go on the investments and can answer the question about the growth of the unfunded liability cost to come up for.
As much as this is not a topic for this, but we'll listen to what you have to say.
Guys, is that Marty?
Yes, sir. Yes, Representative. For the record, I'm Marty Carlin, Director of Communications and Legislative Affairs, and I'd like to introduce you to our new Executive Director. And
the name of the commissioner?
Jane Goodwin.
Jane Goodwin.
Jan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have, actually, in response to Senator Guida's comment on the growth of the unfunded liability, the prime driver in the increase in the unfunded since the decennial in 2017 was in fact a reduction in the assumed rate of return to a more actuarially reasonable 6.75% from the 7.25% that it was. Last year we did not meet that assumed rate of return, and it did add some liability to the plan from that 1 year. This year, we have had a bounce back in the markets. The 1.1% return, that you kind of need some oxygen, I'm sorry. That 1.1% return for June 30th of 2020
you know, sort of wasn't officially announced until the private market investments were valued in the fall, and wasn't sort of picked up over here until the winter. And by then, the markets had rebounded tremendously since, you know, the March to June drop at the outset of COVID. So the preliminary performance through this June 30th of 2021, which includes marketable assets, those are about 75% of the fund, fixed income stocks, et cetera, we were looking at a 26.8% rate of return, you know, on this fiscal 21. We still have to value the private equity and private debt investments. The expectation is that 1 year return is going to be in excess of 27% when all is said and done. We've been able to increase the trust fund assets from about $1.9 billion to $11.3 billion over the past year, which first time we would have hit $11 billion and the first time we've had a $2 billion gain in 1 year. So last year, one of the issues, and when the committee met in May, Larry Johansson, our investment director, spoke to this relative to peers. You know, a good return for June 30th of 20 was maybe 4%, you know, four and change. We had the 1.1. And one of the reasons for that is the investment committee's decision to stay in small and mid and small and mid cap investments. Last year, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, the large cap, you know, the Amazons, the Googles, they were the ones that were soaring once things started picking up. But these sections of the market, the mid cap and the mid cap, trailed the S&P last year significantly. And that's why it kind of explains most of the 1.1%. This year, that strategic decision to move to overweight in the small cap was rewarded. The Russell 2000 was up 62%, and the Russell 2500 was up 58%, which is, the S&P was up 41. So that's one of the reasons we made so much more back, as they stayed the course, you know, in those baskets. So just some general information, you know, for your consideration. But the growth of the unfunded is typically more related to changes in assumptions, increases in mortality, reductions to the assumed rate of return, payroll growth, things like that, than actual market performance. We won't have the full picture on, you know, the 3, 5, and 10 years until we value the private investments in the, you know, come late September, early December. But with this fiscal 21 to date information on marketable, the 3 year return is looking about close to 11%. So, you know, and the 5 year is also 10.9. So, you know, 1 year doesn't make or break a, you know, and we're not going to pat ourselves on the back and declare victory after a good year this year. But, you know, markets don't move in straight lines, and the investment committee tries to do its best to manage risk with liquidity and, you know, avoid having all the eggs in one basket.
Questions? Representative Weiler.
Even if you went just for a stock fund that just followed the market, you would have done better than you've done.
Depends on the time period, I think, Representative. You know, whatever, you know, because even a month or a quarter can really distort what your, you know, your endpoint dependency. So there are probably periods of time, and perhaps where anyone, I don't have any data on that, but where, you know, an index fund does better than actively managed investments, and I think there's going to be times when the opposite is the case.
Will I get a list of 10-year returns?
Yeah, I absolutely.
Thank
I thought
you.
We had sent that over. Apologies if we hadn't.
Thank you.
Ms. Goodwin, would you like to weigh in? Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Marty has covered everything.
Pardon me, can you take your mask off, because it's really hard to understand.
Speak into the microphone.
Thank you.
Sure, I apologize. Marty has already covered everything. We're very proud of our fiscal year 21 return. The long-term strategy of the independent investment committee is paying off. And as Marty said earlier, the reason why we've seen the increases in the unfunded liability It's primarily due to the changes in actuarial assumptions. Now that we're at 6.75% as our assumed rate of return, that's one of the most conservative ones in the country. And a lot of other public pension plans are following what we have done and are lowering their returns. Oregon just lowered theirs, for example, to 6.9% last week.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question. Representative Weiler had said that your average over 10 years is roughly 4%. And I guess the question I have is, when the rest of the market was just going crazy, in a good way, why are we at 4% over 10 years? Okay, to me, that investment strategy is a huge part of the fact that we're $6 billion in the hole right now. So, again, over the long period, the performance has been dismal. What's changing?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Gaida.
Senator.
Senator, I apologize.
Thank you.
It depends on what time period you're looking at. We do not yet have the 10-year numbers for fiscal year 21, but as Marty said, the numbers for 3 and 5 years for fiscal year 21 are significantly above our assumed rate of return. You have to remember the Independent Investment Committee has to balance the desire to participate fully in the market when the markets are going crazy, but that doesn't always happen. That's why we have to have a well-diversified portfolio.
I understand
that. Over time.
Further question? Can you give us the 10-year rate of return for fiscal 20 and prior? You say you don't have it for 21, but can you give us for the 10 years prior?
Yes, for June 30, 2020, the fiscal, the 10-year number was 8.7%.
Thank you.
I'll mention that was in the summary on the first page, but it was also, you compare it to the their benchmark was 9.3%. So there was a difference there between what the benchmark was, what they reached, but it was also over the expected rate at the time.
Any other questions or discussion? Thank you. Thank you, folks. Mental health workforce development.
I think the last meeting that you had, you talked about, it was a commission set up by the governor, and it was a discussion about whether this audit, what we were gonna look at, whether it's really the commission was going to do a lot of that work. Was that a better agency to do that instead of us? And at the time, you put the audit on hold. So you voted on it once, and then you put it on hold.
Anybody want to remove that from hold or leave it where it is?
We'll wait and see what the commission
can do. I think we should leave it where it is and find out what's happening. Because they're... I think there are a number of things that have been put in place with regard to workforce development. And of course, the $10 million that's being allocated by the Employment Security, the $1,000 and the $500 figures for jobs that are created, maybe that would be effective in this area to bringing more people to the workforce. I mean, that's what we need, bodies in the workforce, and that's retraining some existing people and bringing new people into the workforce. I can't for the life of me understand how we had an active workforce prior to the pandemic, and after the pandemic we can't find people to work. We have 24,000 people still collecting unemployment, but we can't find any people to work. There's got to be something that happened. Either people are not soliciting work, they're not looking for work, or the programs that we had in place to sustain them when they were unemployed were so good that they don't want to get off of them. Very, very concerned about that, as it affects the hospitality industry, but certainly as it affects the the mental health workforce where we can't find anybody to work at this point in time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Guyer.
One of the problems that we have as far as finding people to work in the clinical side is that it takes 4,000 hours of experience to become a licensed clinical social worker in the state. And I'm going to be bringing legislation to do as we've done with other professions to a graduated levels of accomplishment that enable them to enter the workforce. It's you can't get there without getting here, and you can't get here without getting there. You got to have the license to get in, and you can't get the license unless you're in. So that is a structural problem that's creating a huge problem as far as mental health workers getting into the workforce.
Thank you. Jay, you mentioned the environmental protection controls. Was that what was it?
So the audit the last meeting, there's another topic that you decided to dismiss.
Okay. Okay, we're going to identify and vote on new audit topics. Does members of the committee have any suggestions for new topics for staff?
I guess we did one already. Elderly adult. That was to keep John busy.
Yeah, just to review, that the elderly adult choice program that the committee has just voted to approve and pass along, so we will draft a letter to the fiscal committee for their August meeting to be signed by the chair for their approval of that, and then we will develop a scope statement and come back to you next meeting. This is really just any new topics that you either want to put in our queue or discuss amongst the committee for future consideration. So,
Senator Hennessy.
Thank you. As far as your queue goes now, how are we doing for timing and workload?
I think we, with this additional topic, we're probably okay for the rest of this calendar year.
We'll probably need new topics by winter, December,
yep.
January timeframe.
Okay, something to keep in mind. Congratulations on your award. Do we have other business? Well, with that, we're adjourned to the call of the chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.